This is an ABC podcast.
This is Neat and Footy with Sam Wykes and Tinirau Arona on ABC Radio Australia.
Mālo lele and welcome everyone to Neesian Footy, the number one place to get your Pacifica footy news and stories in the rugby league and rugby union worlds. It's good to be back here on Monday alongside my Cook Island koi, Tinirau Arona. We have a packed show.
Packed show, mate. Kia ora, Sammy. Kia ora to all our listeners. I have a feeling this will be rugby league dominated this episode.
When isn't it?
With the NRL Grand Finals and NRLW Grand Final that was held over the weekend. But I must say, man, huge shout out to Penrith Panthers. Four in a row, five grand finals, and they get the job done. We'll also catch up with Shelley Long. We haven't had her on the last couple episodes due to her ACL injury, so it'll be good to see how she's travelling and also cover the NRLW Grand Final. But we have a huge guest on our show here on Neesian Footy. Now, Penrith Panthers lost to the Melbourne Storm in 2020, and one of the players that were involved in that team for the Melbourne Storm was the great Felice Kaufusi. He's represented Queensland, Australia, Tonga. He's played over 200 games for the Melbourne Storm and now representing the Dolphins. Man, I'm looking forward to this chat, Sammy.
Yeah, it'll be a big one there. Just, you know, his journey into NRL, you know, up in Bundaberg in Queensland. So not too many Tongans out there, that's for sure. But yeah, looking forward to hearing his journey and what it means to play for Tonga as well.
Huge get. Looking forward to the chat with Felice. So stay tuned.
Moment of the week.
Obviously, the moment of the week is the Penrith Panthers winning four in a row. But I just want to touch on the celebrations after and something that caught my eye. You know, we will see Jerome Luai. He'll move on with Sunia Turuva to the West Tigers. Also, James Fisher-Harris moving to the Warriors. I feel like every year the Penrith Panthers are just moving players on to fit in the salary cap. But one thing that stood out for me was when Brian To'o, Jerome Luai both came off the field to their families, and the two people they meet was someone, Stephen Crichton and Spencer Lenu, who moved on from last year's grand final winners. So, just to see that love and that passion they have, that friendship, that bond, the connection, that was quite heartwarming to see.
What do you reckon? Are they watching that grand final? Is like going, have we made the right choice? Four rings sounds nice.
Maybe a little bit.
A little bit.
In the back of their mind, but yeah. I think deep down, you know, they're quite proud that they played a big role into where that club and where that team is now, you know, the culture that they grew together, and you can see that connection. So, and also, you know, both of them have had great years, you know, Roosters making the semi-final and Stephen Crichton also, you know, captain of the year, centre of the year for the Bulldogs. So I don't think they'd be too disappointed in
Three's plenty anyway. It's hard to get one. Three is plenty, so yeah, you're right.
Good on, everyone. My name's Cal Ito, and you're listening to Neesian Footy.
Let's kick it off straight into the grand final. Panthers versus the Storm. You know, 2024 minor premiers, and they were the last team to beat the Panthers in the grand final, 2020 grand final. And the Panthers, their fifth grand final in a row, chasing their fourth NRL premiership in a row. And it was the last ride for a few of the players that I just mentioned. I just think the stage was set for a big game, and man, the boys didn't disappoint on both ends. I thought the Panthers really built that early pressure. The way that they carried the ball out of their own end, attacking the middle, kicking long, defending well, that line speed. I thought the Storm held in their early stages through some gritty defense, and they ended up being the first to score in this match. Now, a strong carry from Samoan Sean Blore, who's also a Penrith junior, grew up out at Penrith, and he took a strong carry, left a Panthers defender on the ground, and Harry Grant goes into hooker, finds some space, and then charges over for the first try for the Storm. Now, only 4 minutes later, the Panthers get their opportunity, you know, off a set play. Now, this play we've seen a few times this year, and only last week, it was the exact same play that Nathan Cleary hit Paul Alamotti. He goes in untouched. So this play, they go at the back to Nathan Cleary. There's two lead runners. This time, though, he does throw the cutout, but Paul Amotti turns it up to Jerome Lua, who's sweeping around the back. He draws the defender, catch pass to the flying Fijian Sunia Turuva to score in the corner.
Then back on the inside it comes to Tungor. He's taken only 7 metres out from the goal line. King was in over the top. Now it's Kenny. Fires it out the back left to Cleary. Then a quick spin and spin. Alamoni Luai Turuva. He says Vanaka Bakalevu. And Sunia Turuva in his final game for Penrith is over to score.
You bring up a really good point, T, just around the coach in detail, painting the same picture week in, week out. There's so much footage out there and you're reviewing it hard and you're thinking, what's coming at us? And the thing I loved about Penrith in that game, as you said, they painted the same picture, but they have slight variations that you have to try and defend all options, but you just can't. And I even think of what you said last week, and when I go, but what do the Melbourne Storm need to do to, or Penrith need to do to be able to get the win? You said, whoever holds onto the ball the most and with their kick, you know, their contestable crossfield kicks because of their tall wingers,
yep,
limit their opportunities down there. And that's exactly what they did. And I love the fact that they still respected the fact that they're not going to out-jump Xavier Coates and the wingers for Melbourne Storm. But what they did had a plan B around is just get numbers around the ball. And we saw that with the, you know, the try savers every time. Yeah, like you can have it, but we're going to have numbers around the ball so you can't get a really good outcome. So that coaching detail is next level, not just Ivan, but like their whole coaching staff. I'm sure the players would have had input as well.
Yeah, there was a great image after this try that was scored from Sunia Turuva. It goes up to the box and sees their reaction. And you can see the coaches, once that try scored, you know, a couple of them just get up going, yes, it worked, you know. They've obviously worked on this play and they picked the right option, this one. And, you know, he comes up with the chocolates. But, probably the assistant coaches and the coaching staff probably don't get that much recognition. But I know they play a huge role in their performance. So, hats off to them. And, you know, the way that the boys performed, the way that they built pressure, stuck to their system, you know, got out of their own end. Their outside backs were dominant. You know, they really went after that Melbourne middle. And the pressure that they built early in the game, you could see that pay off towards the back end. So back end of each half. So before halftime, you know, Liam Martin, he gets a nice try. It was a pass to Jerome Loy to the open. He ends up throwing a long ball to Nathan Cleary, switches down the short side, and then Liam Martin goes in, scores. Panthers lead halftime 10-6. Now, you can only just sense the amount of fatigue and in the Melbourne Storm, which I'll touch on shortly. In the second half, there was also a nice play from Xavier Coates where he gets up off a crossfield kick, and you mentioned the players getting around the ball. So they're letting them tall boys get up. But as long as they get more, the Panthers get defenders in the frame, they'll be able to solve the problem once they come down. Now, Xavier Coates hits the ball back to Jack Howarth. As soon as Jack Howarth, as he goes over for a try, he's already wrapped up by four Panthers around him. You know, not too long after that, on the 60th minute, Cleary puts up a kick. Liam Martin, who gets the Clive Churchill medal for the Panthers, he chases the kick, jumps up, and he's contesting Xavier Coates, one of the best in the air. He ends up getting up, grabs the ball, comes down with it. Now, this is a moment where most fans wouldn't understand the effort that's involved. He looks inside and he sees Moses Leota. Out of all people, Moses Leota, he's the one that's chasing alongside Liam Martin. So he's in the frame, he gets the ball, and he still has to do a bit of work where he steps off his left, but then to pass the left-to-right pass under pressure to Paul Alamotti, and then Paul Alamotti goes on and scores, that just shows the effort that they had for one another during this game.
Penrith 37 out on the last Cleary. The kick from 36 out to the wing of Coates, coming through the chase, and the ball ends up with Liam Martin. Martin turns it in Leota, then out to the right it goes for Penrith. Alamotti, cover coming, Alamotti dives over. He scores a try. He might need to give Superman back his cape. Brilliant from Penrith. Liam Martin, he came away with a kick. And Alamotti, transferring from left centre to right wing, dives over to score in the corner. Penrith 14, Melbourne 6.
Yeah, Alamotti was outstanding in that game. Some defensive efforts as well. So you mentioned the fatigue factor with the forwards. I'm sure the Melbourne Storm forwards are fit, like fit as. But how much of an impact does Cleary taking hit-ups and the outside backs taking hit-ups for Penrith do for the forwards, for the Penrith to, you know, conserve energy?
Yeah, so it's that arm wrestle. You know, when the outside backs, fullback, he returns it, Dylan Edwards gets them on the front foot. Remember, after the Melbourne or the opposition kicked the ball, the forwards are, you know, still far away from where the outside backs are getting the ball. So if they can get them on the front foot and meet the forwards that are running back to try and get behind the ball, it's less energy that they have to spend. On the flip side, when Panthers are kicking down and then their outside, the Storm's outside backs aren't getting on the front foot, meeting the Melbourne forward Storm's pack, they have to spend more energy getting behind the ball, turn around and try and get them on the front foot. And then eventually, you know, that collectively, their meters add up and you could see in the legs, you know, I know Tui Kamikamitha had a big start, but you could see after about 15 minutes, the legs started to get a bit fatigued towards the back end. The players probably for Melbourne Storm were that fatigued that they couldn't find answers to try and score points. Man, I just thought it was a masterclass from the Panthers. I know we spoke about the Storm Big Four, but they could only do so much behind a rolling ruck. Now, if you're on the back foot, they obviously can't find them opportunities that they've had all year. So, once again, congratulations to the Penrith Panthers, the four-peat champions, winning this one 14-6, and really looking forward to the chat with Felice Kaufusi because he'll be able to give us a bit of detail on you know, how great Penrith really are. And remember, you can hear all the Pacific Championships live on ABC Radio Australia. That is coming up only a couple weeks away.
Good work, T. Beautiful. We're going to shift over to rugby union. And as always, there's not much happening on the news front there. No test matches being played for the men's, but we will cover a lot of our rugby union chat with Shelley Long on the Long Story Short because there were some great games between the Wallaroos and South Africa, as well as Fiji playing against Manusina Samoa. So we'll get the results and some standout players on that one. But to kick us, I've got something. I had to dig deep here. I had to go far and wide to find something in the global game. And because I came back from Japan just last week, I come back and Joey Manu actually goes over. So
a bit of a swap.
So two legends of the games, superstars.
Geez, that's quick. The Roosters only finished last week.
We've been talking to Todd Aikefu. Like, obviously, they don't kick off to December 1st.
But they all need him.
They all need him there, and they have a camp week. They have their camp week before it gets too cold as well. So they go and spend some time, like, in Hokkaido. Yeah, we've got some audio of Joey Manu in the team room, you know, introducing himself. The translator is there, and there's actually an art to when you go over to, you know, a country where they don't speak English, but making sure you leave a bit of room there for the translator to get what you said and translate it to the group. So he will get that when he gets here. He was probably a little bit fast with his introduction, didn't give that space, but yeah, I think it was cool to see him over there getting in amongst it.
Hey, my name is Joseph Manu.
Joseph Manu, yes.
I'm from Tokyo, New Zealand.
New Zealand, okay, close.
Playing rugby league over in Australia.
Australia, rugby league is the
master's. The last few years. But yeah, happy to be here. Really excited. Yeah, looking forward to meeting you.
Yeah, I remember when the cuz, Limo Sopoanga, he went over to his Japanese team and I think he'd done a bit of practice because when he went up and done his introduction in front of the team, he'd done it a bit of it in Japanese.
Did he?
And they were quite impressed and yeah, he got a bit of a cheer after.
Also, just in some schoolboy news, the Fijian schoolboys beat the Australian schoolboys in a two-test series over in Fiji. I think it's really positive signs over in Fiji with their pathways and the development, especially with the inclusion of the Fijian Drua. Every kid now wants to grow up playing
for the Drua
in both the women's and the men's space. So there's a lot of aspirations there. So they're trying to really, you know, build that pathway so they don't have to continue to bring players from overseas. And they're really planting that seed nice and early. I will say this as well, though, from an Australian point of view, that Australian schoolboys used to be the pinnacle of your rep pathway system for Australia. That's no longer the case. So for those who don't know, the Australian under-18s get chosen, which played on the weekend against New Zealand. And then whoever doesn't make that Aussie 18s team, they play in the Australian schoolboys team. So great news for Fiji, but there's still a long way to go in terms of, I think for Fiji as well, understanding how to close that gap, because Australia were outstanding in that under-18s versus New Zealand. They got the win there, a really hard-fought win. Two players from that team we should be looking out for in both league and union. Pretty sure they're going to go to league, but but they are the next big things coming through. Hemasi Makasini on the wing. Pretty sure the Tigers have already tabled like a 5-year deal for him. And Heinz Lemoto, the number 8 for the Australia A. So, for Australian under-18s, I think the Penrith Panthers have already tabled a 3-year offer for him. So, where they go, I'm not too sure, but two big superstars for the future. Keep an eye out for those two.
Nice, Sammy. Well, you heard it here first on Nation 40. Keep an eye out for those two players. Is that all for Rugby Union?
That's it, mate. No grand final news.
You've done well to dig deep and give us a history lesson. let's head over to Shelley Long for the Long Story Short.
The Long Story Short with Shelley Long.
Yes, it is Shelley Long this time. She is back, our NRLW representative and our PNG Orchid star. Shelley, it's been a minute. I know that you have had a bad injury and you've been missing for the last couple of weeks, but for our listeners that are probably not up to date, do you want to give a quick rundown on how your injury is going and what actually happened in the knee?
Yeah, so unfortunately, in the last round game of NRLW, we were versing the Knights at home. I've gone to step into contact and my knee gave out. And then I kept playing and then it gave out again. So a pretty rough one. It was confirmed an ACL. So unfortunately for me, that does mean I missed Pacific Championships, one of my favourite times of the year, and out for a little bit, but I'll be back. And I'm excited for this rehab journey. I think that will definitely make me stronger.
Oh man, I'm devastated for you. I understand. Both of us know that injury all too well, the ACL, but it does build a lot of character, and your personality and your character is first class. So I've got no doubt you'll be back bigger and better for this experience. So we wish you all the best with that rehab. Speaking of pack champs, are you involved in any way? Just like, I don't know, coaching staff or something, the kit bag, the content person, something to get on the plane?
Yeah, so I've been pretty lucky, with the Orchids, and they've actually invited me to go into Pacific Championships as a part of the Orchids team. I'll come in as a player mentor. So I guess for me, I've got a lot of good things and positive things that still came out of this injury. And, I love my country. I love going into the Orchids camp. It's one of the best times of the year for me. So to be involved in any way and to be a player mentor is definitely something that I'm going to cherish and I'm super grateful.
Oh, that's awesome that you still get to play a role, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you during Pack Champs because you know your boy finds a way into them camps. what does the NRLW look like for you? You know, being off contract, being injured in the last, near the last game.
Yeah, so at the moment I'm still waiting on surgery that was originally planned for tomorrow, but I couldn't get my knee straight enough for the surgery, so they've pushed it back till the following Monday. Then I'll spend 2 weeks at home doing absolutely nothing, relaxing. I'm a terrible patient if you ask my partner, but I'll try my best to sit still. And then I'll hopefully get the green light to fly over to PNG for Pack Champs. In terms of rehab, though, it's a 9 to more so for women, it's around that 12-month mark, return to play. So aiming to get back in time for Pacific Championships next year, but the club does help with that whole rehab process, even though I did unfortunately also fall off contract at that time.
I didn't know it was an extra 3 months for the rehab. Yeah. I know when I done my ACL, it's not the easiest injury to go through. And I know during surgery, so with the ACL on my one, they replaced it with the middle third of my patella.
Oh, did you get patella? Mine was hamstring tendon.
So you got hamstring?
Yeah, with hammy tendon.
And they use that as your new ACL. Now, I don't want to sound like a doctor here, but what does your...
Your graft.
Yeah, what's your new ACL going to be?
Doctor.
That's why I said I don't want to sound like a doctor, but...
So my ACL will actually be my hamstring. I sort of opted for that way because just with some of the stuff with my kneecap and also I've got a smaller kind of, I guess, kneecap. So instead of taking it and making that 1 week, I thought, you know, I've got some big juicy hamstrings. I'll take from there. I've been doing a lot of sporting, doing a lot of stuff before the injury. So hopefully that hamstring graft will work in my favour.
You mentioned you're going to be off contract. What's the future look like for yourself then?
Well, the future looks like I'm just going to focus on the next 12 months rehabbing the injury. But I get to stay around the club. I get to use the facility. So for me, that gives me more motivation. That means that the coaches still walk into the door and I still get to access those facilities and, I guess, showcase some of the things that I'm really good at, which is grinding out the tough moments. So for me, I'm just looking forward to the next 12 months and then whatever happens after that. But I'm definitely wanting another NRLW jersey and a Pacific Champion jersey as well.
If there's one person I know who can bounce back, it is you, Shelley. NRLW Grand Final, let's rip straight into it. What were your thoughts on this game?
Oh, I thought, what a close game. Like, the end of it was incredible. But I will say, when I was watching it at the beginning and the Roosters were up 24-0, I thought, you know what, they're walking away with this for sure, 40 points to probably 6. But it was Sharks captain and proud Tongan woman, Tiana Penatani, that led from the front. And that is why she got Deli M Captain of the Year, because she showcased it in that game, scoring 3 minutes into the second half and gaining that momentum back for her team.
Sharks' best look for a while. Can they claw back at this 24-0 deficit? Dodd, the left-hand side. Shared wide again. Penatani steps inside. Sergis goes in to score. They do have the best possible start in this second half. The Sharks are in through their skipper and the ABC zone. Tiana Penatani.
My thoughts were, if they had half a decent or even just a little bit more effort or stop one try in the first half, it might have been a different result. But Roosters get the job done. In your view, you know, we've seen the same teams, you know, winning the competition in the NRLW, Roosters, Newcastle and Broncos. Do you think it's time, you know, to see a shift, or, you know, are you getting bored of seeing the same teams winning?
Oh, you know what? I think that there's great competition. Like, Cronulla Sharks goes to show that it's not just, you know, the Roosters, Knights and Broncos. Like, yes, they didn't win the grand final, but they gave it a really good crack. They don't have, you know, a salary cap overload there, which I feel like, you know, Roosters, I'm sorry how you do it. But, you know, the Sharks are definitely showing that the times are changing and it's not just the Broncos, Roosters and Knights anymore, that those new teams and those other teams can be up there too. So I think the times are changing, T. I think, you know, yeah, well, they're on a roll.
And then do you think the Bulldogs and Warriors, they're going to be added to the competition next year? Do you think they'll have a quick rise to the top?
Oh, I think that might still be a building one. Every year, you know, the first year we've noticed that it takes a little bit longer to find your rhythm. And I do know that a lot of clubs do help and share like what they've done previously to make sure that it's not blowout games. But I think it does take a year to find your groove and find your place in the NRLW. But I do think, you know, the Sharks, the Cowboys, the Raiders, they're definitely teams that will look to excel next year after 2 years in the competition.
Yeah, nice. We've got the upcoming Pacific Championships, and before the PAC Champs, it's actually the Prime Minister's 13, which will be held in Port Moresby. We'll start there with the PM's 13. How is the PNG Orchids looking?
The PNG Orchids are looking really good. They actually headed into camp yesterday, and then they fly over to Port Moresby today. So they go into camp a nice and early in preparation for the PM 13 game, which will take place on Sunday. However, Australia heads into camp tomorrow on the Gold Coast and then fly out to Port Moresby on Friday. So it'll be interesting. I'll be interested to see how the Gillaroos climatise to the heat from only a Friday to a Sunday preparation in Port Moresby, because we do know that over there it is extremely humid and a beautiful, beautiful sun shining over that place every day.
Do you have a name for us to look out for, either up-and-comer or a genuine superstar that's going to lead from the front?
Oh, I would have to say LaTonya. She's someone who was with us for the train and trial program at the Cowboys. She's someone that really excelled last year in the Pacific Championships and someone that I think will definitely demonstrate why she deserves to be back in the NRLW pathway as well.
When the players get to Port Moresby and they connect at the and touch down in PNG, what's it like when they get off the plane and they walk through customs and everyone is there?
Oh, it looks like the amount of people that get around to the airport to celebrate players coming through the doors, and especially for our home-based PNG players, they have family waiting there. They have, you know, an extended family waiting there for them, family that they didn't even really know that they had up until that point. So it's incredible. It's a lot of tears. It's a lot of emotions. But it's honestly one of the greatest privileges that you get to do is walk back to your country and be greeted with such vibrant lights from your country's people.
Who are you tipping in the Pacific Bowl to take out the tournament so far, just before the teams are announced?
Before the teams are announced, I'm going to have to say Samoa, with the announcement of Avania Polite, and they've got a lot of really good players as well, like Niall Williams in there. So I think they've got a really strong squad to take out the Pacific Championships.
Too easy. Anything else in the rugby league world, or are we off to our ad break in rugby union?
I love how you've run with it. I've said that joke once, and now it's every time rugby union's an ad break.
Sam gets filthy every time. That's why I say it.
He thinks he knows me, but you don't know.
Yes, angry as this little.
That's it, actually, guys. But you know what? It's a little bit more than an ad break today. I've got a lot of news over in the rugby union world for you.
Yeah, look at
beautiful.
That
spring. Hopefully, it's more than what Sammy gave.
So, just do me a big favour here. I know, like, you know, there's a bit of disappointment around the knee, but just really give rugby union some energy. You know,
that's
worse than your knee at the moment. I'm telling you right now. But pump the tyres up, light the fires. Let's get over to rugby union. How about that?
Yes. So the Wallaroos have shown how much a World Cup qualifier means to them.
Yes. How good the Wallaroos victory.
Who they beat?
Their first game against Wales and South Africa. They both got wins in those in the WXV2. The Wallaroos won 37-5 against Wales, with youngster Faitala Moleka winning player of the game.
Yes, she's been outstanding, Faitala, the last 2 weeks. And the best thing about her, she's been playing at 5'8", the fly half position. Her strength is her running game. She's been outstanding, along with Eva Kapani. Did you see her try again? She's on that zone 10 metres out. That's her zone.
And getting that ball and just running hard, that's her favourite thing to do, and she is unstoppable. I keep watching her highlight reels. I love it. I want to see more, and hopefully in this game coming up on the weekend, we can see that. So they do have that game this weekend against Scotland, but on the weekend, just gone, they did beat South Africa 33-26, a closer one than they would have liked, but you know what? You'll take two wins where you can get them.
Not wrong. What about in the other game, Manusina Samoa against Fijiana?
So Fijiana have been riding a roller coaster of emotions in the WXV3. Their campaign started off with a high, winning an impressive 38-3 against Hong Kong. It was Fijiana skipper Kara Naisewa who took out player of the match in her incredible performance. However, this weekend, they did go down to their Pacifica sisters, Manusina XV. They did make history, however, Manusina XV, after winning an incredible 45-17, their highest ever win against their Fijiana sisters. So that loss was unfortunate for Fijiana, however, incredible for Manusina, and Fijiana will now play Spain this Saturday.
Yeah, big news for Manu Sinner. They've been outstanding. Their scrum half, France Bloomfield. Oh, she set up the first try. Nice little run from the scrum and put some players through for them to score. And she scored two herself. So she's been outstanding for Samoa in that one. And for Samoa, it puts them in good position too for World Cup qualification 2025. So I think after that win, so it puts them in really good position and looking forward to see how they finish off their tour.
Yeah, they've had a great campaign. They did draw 8-8 against the Netherlands, but they do have Madagascar this Friday. They'll be looking to hopefully get another win, like you said, Sam, to qualify for the World Cup in 2025.
Not wrong. Actually, we should actually point out Ashley Masters, well, Cook Islander for the Wallaroos. Outstanding defensive efforts. So some good signs there for the Wallaroos. Good signs there for Manu Sinner. Still some work there for Fijiana, but plenty happening around the corner for them to improve. Yeah, outstanding, Shelley. Look at that. That was great energy.
Great energy. Shelley, it's been a pleasure, and we will see you next week on Nation Footy.
See you guys next week. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Faitala Moleka, and you're listening to Nation Footy.
Well, Sammy, like I said, a huge guest, and it's an honour to have this Tongan legend on our show. He's played over 200 NRL games representing the Storm and the Dolphins. He's also represented Queensland, Australia, and the Kingdom of Tonga, and he's won two premierships, one in 2017 and one in 2020, where they were the last team to beat the Penrith Panthers before they went on their run. I just want to introduce the man himself, Felice Kafusi. Felice, welcome to the show, brother.
Hey, Big T, Sammy, thank you for having me. What an intro, my man.
Oh, we'd like to make you feel...
Pump up the tyres. Yeah, that's it.
Shoulders are back, chest is out now.
Hey, is it Felice or Felice? Just...
Well, it's Felice, but growing up, like I said, I'm rude. They're like, what, Felicity for Felice?
True.
Felice, yes, that's a good one.
I just got over it. They're going, they couldn't pronounce it, so instead of saying Felice, I just said Felice. Yeah, it's just Felice.
Yeah, because I've been wrong a couple of times because I thought Lehi, or well, Lehi. I was going, nah, it's Lehi, 100%, put my house on it. Then Will Hopewhite comes on and goes, oh, nah, it's Lehi, bro. And I was like, are you sure? Oh, I'm not going to question you. It's your brother. Yeah, I don't know. That's what he said when he was on here. So
I would see it as Lehi.
But anyway, so I just wanted to just double check to make sure. So when we say it on here, it's Felice.
Felice.
Like I said, bro, you're a part of the last team that beat, you know, Penrith Panthers in 2020. Talk us through that experience and, you know, how much that meant to you winning your second premiership.
Yeah, look, well, the Panthers are gone on there right now. I probably feel like, you know, I'll tell my grandkids, you know, we're the ones that beat them first before they went on their mad run. But that 2020 year was pretty crazy. It was the COVID year. We're all in our bubbles, and I think that's what made it more special. Like you said, I played in the 2017 grand final for my first premiership, and you know, people will ask, you know, what was your favorite premiership? I think it's the journey. So 2017, pretty smooth sailing. We killed it that year and ended up winning against the Cowboys. And just what it took to go in a bubble, the sacrifices we made, that everyone made in the NRL, made that 2020 year a lot more special and probably one that I'll remember for a long time. And now, given the circumstances, like I said, how the Panthers has now went on their dynasty, so to say. As a player, I still despise them, but I think, you know, if you take a step back, I myself appreciate what they've done, and I don't think anyone will really appreciate what they've done until you look back at, you know, how hard it is to get to grand final, let alone to win it.
Yeah, you mentioned Craig Bellamy, and he's had 10 grand finals now. Yeah, huge achievement. I think he's one of the best in the game, and alongside Wayne Bennett and a number of others, but yourself being coached from both Wayne Bennett and Craig Bellamy, could you tell us a bit about the differences between both coaches?
Yeah, well, with Craig, it's what you see is what you get. You guys would see from the media and that, the way he sprays the boys on the when he's sitting behind the coach's box. That's exactly what we get. It's pretty ruthless, but I'd have another way. I like a straight shooter. I know I like to know where I stand in a team, where I need to get better. And with Wayne, it was a nice different change for me. And he's a bit different. I think he's got the best poker face because he doesn't give the media anything, but in behind doors, he's the man. And you know, he's really wise too. You know, it's not just on the footy field, but off the footy field. You know, he tries to get you to be the best person you can be. And I think he's the man You know, he's seen every type of personality throughout his coaching career, his playing career, and he can see where, you know, if you need a cuddle or if you need, if he needs to tell you straight, whereas maybe other coaches just have the one way of letting you know, or their coaching style.
A while back, we had David Lakisa on talking about perception and how Pacific Island people trust other people. And then he would say that they'll trust the person, not the process. For someone like Craig Bellamy and Wayne Bennett, how do they build trust with our Pacific Island players, knowing that they're such, you know, big figures in the game? And as you said, straight shooter, sometimes it can go one or two ways with some of our Pacifica players. But how do both of those guys build that respect with our Pacifica players?
Yeah, it's just having that understanding. I think what makes Craig a great coach is he's been able to evolve with the players. And that, like you said, this next gen coming through probably needed more of a cuddle than being straight shooters. So he's been able to do that. And with Wayne, I think he's learned to evolve in himself, the way he talks to players, especially our Pacifica boys, probably relies more on myself or other leaders or other boys have that chat with them where he knows he'll probably get a better response from them coming from a good place.
Yeah, I want to shift gears a little bit and wind the clock back. You know, I know you're born in New Zealand and you moved to Bundaberg in Queensland at a young age. Yeah, what was your upbringing like, a young Islander boy growing up in a place like Bundaberg?
Yeah, pretty crazy. Born and grew up in Auckland until I was seven. We moved over with the whole family and it was a big culture shock. We've gone from being around a Tongan community, heaps of Tongans back in Auckland, church community, and coming to Bundaberg, a regional town where country meets coast. I call it home now. I love Bundy. I love to represent Bundaberg. It was a big culture shock. You know, I think it was only three other Tongan families, and that was my cousins. It was the old man and his two sisters with their kids. So every weekend, we'd go over for barbecues, and school was a challenge too. Kind of, there's a lot of Balangis, a lot of Australians and Aborigines, but we didn't have that, not that backing, but that connection of our Tongan people around us. So that made it hard, but yeah, the boys always give me shit now. They think I'm plastic, and that's probably half the reason now, because I sound more Aussie than I do.
Tell them the rule, Sammy.
Yeah, no, we can't say plastic on it anymore. We're just here. We're doing our best, even if we don't know the language. We're just having a crack.
But if you got Tongan blood, you're Tongan.
You're Tongan, definitely.
Yeah, my man.
Yeah, that's the one. When you talk about that connection to culture, did parents still speak Tongan to kids at home? You know, when you talk about the barbecues, was it like, you know, tunupuaka and manioca and all that? And where did you source it from to get, you know, to have those type of feeds there?
Yeah, for sure. Man, my parents were fresh as. The reason why they moved over was a bit of opportunity, but there's a lot of farm work there back in Bundaberg, and it still is. It's come a long way there. They're now bringing over seasonal workers, so bringing Fijians, Tongans, you name it. They bring them over because they're such hard workers, and they're able to send money back home now. So growing up, like you said, our backyard, whatever backyard it was, there'll be dalo, there'll be anything the old man could grow in a backyard, and still doing the umbos and that. But we'd have to give the neighbours a heads up because they had washing on and it was all smell.
Oh, the smoke coming
out. The smoke. And obviously, when you do tunupuaka and at the back, we'd have to take turns, and me and a little bro doing those ones. You know what I mean? So luckily, Bundaberg's got a lot of land and a lot of pigs in that around. So my old man had some connections in that way. So plenty of bockers on special occasions. And like I said, if I get a picture for you, it's your laugh, because the backyard, however small it was, it'll have some sort of crops there, manioca, you name it.
Sounds like my dad's backyard. You know, they got he's got his own little turtle patch and, you know, the turtle leaves. And they take such pride in that garden, even though it doesn't look the prettiest. But they are, like, whenever you eat the food from their garden, it's just you can see the shoulders up and they smile. Yeah. But, yeah, you love to see it. With the your representation when I know you played some early games for Tonga, but your connection to Australia and Bundaberg, is that the reason why you decided to choose to represent the Kangaroos?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's only natural as well, having played for Queensland growing up most of my life in Bundaberg. I had that natural pull, or I guess you can say, towards Australia, and been living here for a while. I think that's probably one of the highest accolades you can do if you're growing up in Australia. It's a play for Australia, and I was lucky enough to do that.
Did you ever feel any heat or anyone comment from the Tongan community on you know, while you were representing Queensland or Australia? Because I know some players can feel that bit of pressure when you make that shift.
Not at all. Definitely not playing for Queensland. Like I said, I'm proud. Bundaberg, a man growing up in Queensland, and you get that sense of spirit and pride growing up, which is what I feel, which is what drawn me to play for Queensland. And that Australia, playing for Australia, the only thing I can remember is the pressure I got was from my mum, actually, when I told her in 2017 I was going to pledge to play for Australia, and she said to me, "What about Tonga?" And that's all. So just went one, like in one ear out the other. And then now when I look back, I'm like, oh, poor oldies are proud Tongans. And you know, it's probably one thing that I can think of when you say people putting pressure on. It was just her little sly way of telling me, just remember your roots.
Was that one of the reasons why you ended up, you know, making the shift from Australia representing Tonga? And how much did that mean to you to be able to, you know, represent your family?
Yeah, it's huge. I get the same feeling as I do when I play for Queensland, that sense of pride of never giving up, of playing for your people. It's the same feeling I get when I play for Tonga. And as you guys know, you know, Tonga is a small little nation, but we're making inroads in the rugby league. And that started from Jason Tamalolo, Andrew Fifita, for those guys, Adam Fonua back in the day, and they made a big scene in 2017. And it wasn't until the 2022 where I decided, just behind the scenes, I got a call from Christian Wolf, Tonga coach, and he said he doesn't want me to be in two minds. If you want to play for Tonga, you make up your mind, but he doesn't want me waiting until I get selected to play for Australia. And then if I don't, then you can come play for Tonga. He said he doesn't want guys doing that, or you know, guys having an if, but he says you're welcome to come play for us, but you're all in. There's no waiting around to see if you got picked. So before that 22 World Cup went on, you know, I made the decision behind the scenes to pledge for Tonga.
What were your initial thoughts when you saw Jason Tamalolo and Andrew Fifita going to play for Tonga, and just seeing them and seeing their movement and what it did for the people? And you're obviously a current player at the time, and you're watching that. Like, what are your initial thoughts when they did that?
Oh, it's crazy, man. It takes some balls. Like, they're in the prime of their careers when they did that as well, which was awesome. They weren't just going there in the back end to give back, but for them to do that at that time, you know, I guess showed other guys, other Tongans, that you can go back and play for Tonga. But the ripple effect of the young'uns coming through, the juniors or the ones who are on the fringe are playing first grade, they have options, and it's okay to pledge for Tonga, and you don't have to play for Australia or for Queensland and that. So I think that effect is in full force now, and we will see the benefits of that throughout these next couple of years.
Yeah, you're definitely right. Your boys did make a big impact. I was at the rookie camp earlier this year and ran into Finau Latu, who plays for the Dragons, young Tongan up-and-coming player. And I asked him, I said, you know, if you got the opportunity, and this is off the back of his representing Australia schoolboys. And I said, oh, yeah, if you got the opportunity to represent Australia or Tonga, which one are you choosing? And he said Tonga straight away. I said, oh, why? And he goes, the way that the boys made that move, it inspired me to, I want to one day wear the red jersey. And to me, that just showed the impact that you boys had and the shift that it's having for our young Islander boys coming through the ranks. So should be something you should be proud of. And I noticed the Instagram post that you posted with your uniform on, and the caption was, you know, I'm proud. Oh, I hope you're proud of me. You know, I'm also proud as well. Can you share, you know, who you represent when you wear the red jersey?
Yeah, you're trying to make me emotional here. That's just what it means. You know, growing up with Tongan parents, fresh from the islands. I'm one of nine. Three were born in Tonga. The rest of us in NZ. And to hear of their struggles, their grandparents' struggles, and the ones who come before them is, I think, what keeps us grounded, and it's what they've instilled in us. So when I pull that on, I represent mum and dad, and their family, their parents, and for the family that's still in Tonga and the ones around the world as well. So I don't take it lightly. Like I said, it hits different, and it means a lot. And not just for me, but for all the Tongan players as well, is that same feeling that we have, and the same connection that we have to our country, to our people, and of the struggles they've had for us to be where we are today. And it's funny, Hopper Wadi always says, he jokes around and he says, we laugh at the same things, where if we've seen a dog get run over, us Tongans would be laughing. And you know, Aussies will see that and start crying, but it's just that same stupid sense of humour that we have.
Right, so they always say they're going to put it on the, they're going to tunu te kuri, like they're going to.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, they're going to put it on the barbecue to eat the dog. Oh, it's so true.
It's just that, like, that makes me crack up, but it's so true because we're the ones laughing, but then, like, you know, everyone else reacts real different, but that's just that connection we have. We laugh at the same things. We enjoy the same things, the things we eat, like you said. It really brings us back home.
You're a young father of four, and I know, you know, just listening to you, how much your culture means to you. Is there any certain ways that you like to instill your culture into your kids as well?
Man, I'm trying to so hard, but if I can't even speak it myself, it makes it even harder. But like I said, growing up in Bundaberg, my parents obviously spoke Tongan to us, and we could all understand it.
Mm.
Which is hard for us. I'm real broken, which is a shame. I think I'm starting to lose the language. So when I'm around my aunties and uncles, I'll do the yes, eel, or the half broken English, or just nod. And I think it's a shame that we're losing it. So yeah, I'm just trying to instill in my kids the hellos and goodbyes and malo fato, which I hear from grandma and that. But something I'd love to keep doing or to keep improving is to try and pass on that culture. And that's done in the ways we celebrate, you know, birthdays or baptisms or with the blocker and that, like they get that sense of culture.
Mm. When you're in Tongan camp, does that help you connect back, you know, to just pick up more on some of the language? I know there's a lot of humor involved, but like even the himis and all that type of stuff, does that help you, you know, implement that with your family?
For sure. Yeah, going to Tongan camp for 1 week, I come back speaking fluent or a lot more fluent than I used to. But it's just awesome to touch base with our culture and with the language as well, and certain customs and values which we hold ourselves to. We get to live that again when we're in camp.
One of, I guess you wouldn't say it's a traditional custom, is the haircuts. You know, why are you laughing, bro? I'm just saying, I just saw you had a nice father-son moment, you know, on Instagram where you took him to the barbershop and he got the same style of fade as dad. Yeah, what was the thought process around that, and why did you do it to the poor kid? No, I'm joking.
Sad. I think I nearly had child services knocking on the door. I'm lucky that I don't know where I live. But it's sad. I think I can do it now because he's my son, but I didn't even tell the missus because I knew I'll get in trouble. And the poor guy, I was like, on my way to the barber, I was like, do you want to get the same haircut as dad? He's like, he was in two minds, and I bribed the poor guy and I said, oh, I'll get you Maccas on the way home. And he was like, yeah, sweet. He was all good.
That's unreal. Yeah, I love that.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I reckon you'd suit it, bro.
Yeah, I'm similar. Like, I'm not, you know, bald at the front, but I do wear the mullet at the back. So I think, mate, you may as well just, if you're going to do it, mate, get that mullet out there. I reckon it'll look hectic, the afro at the back.
Well, I reckon that's a perfect challenge. So we've got Nijan Knowledge, and this season, the loser of Nijan Knowledge has to get a tattoo.
Nah, that's not happening.
Next year, not having a haircut. We're getting the first haircut. Oh, actually, is there a name to the fade?
Nah, there isn't, but I'll just hear my mum's voice ringing my ear going, Gosya Urumo Balan. He's talking in disgrace. And all the Tongans know, and they get rude ass haircuts. The oldies are always into you, so it's pretty disgraceful.
Can you translate that for our non Tongan speakers?
He cut his hair because it looks ugly. Make sure you cut
pretty
it.
Much.
So of course you cut it because it looks ugly. There you go. My Tongan's actually all right. Living with my mother-in-law.
No such thing as plastic, mate.
That's the one, mate.
Well, we've got Pac Champs coming up. One thing you're looking forward to with the tournament that's shortly, only around the corner, actually.
Just being back with the boys. Like you said, it's always a laugh. You know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. Everyone's always giving it to each other, so I know they'll be mocking me about my hair straight away. And, you know, you just feel like you're home. You know, you grow in confidence. You share that cultural experience again, and it brings us all together. So I can't wait to get into camp with the boys.
Yeah, nice. I think just on a different one like that, T was with you guys last week playing golf, and he was into my cousin's ear, Isaiah, about playing for the Cook Islands. You know, so it's not happening, mate. Leave him alone. But yourself, New Wayne connection. I know they play rugby league and do the New Wayne, but what's your connection to New Wayne? And is there a chance of playing, trying to represent them when you finish up?
Yeah, look, my cousin's great grandma's brother is actually from New Ways, so I might be a chance.
They're just claiming it.
They're just claiming. Not
that I know of.
Where did we get this from? Who gave us this?
Probably Mike Filomena.
Mikey Filomena.
He was our first New Wayan on the show, and you're now our.
You're not the second anymore. We got our info wrong.
Not to my knowledge, anyway.
Well, Wikipedia. But... someone's doing your Wikipedia, and it's the worst source of, worst platform to get your information from. So that's the last time I go there. I'll go to ChatGPT next time.
Hey, before we wrap it up, though, favorite Tongan food?
Oh, I love lo kapabolo, lo sipi, or sapasui, or otter.
Oh, mate, that's the whole. Front table. That's the whole front table.
Mate. Just give them everything.
Whoever's on the main front table, that's me.
Yeah, bro. From both of us here, we really appreciate your time to be able to jump on our humble little podcast radio show, because your voice goes out to all of the Pacific. They get to listen to our Nisian stars, and we get a lot of feedback from them saying thank you so much. We get to hear their story and their connection, and them representing us. So. Much love to you, Ofalahiatu, and we wish you all the best, pack champs and moving forward.
No worries, man. Thank you very much for having me. Ofatu and Malobito.
Nisian knowledge.
Yes, our Nisian knowledge to finish the show.
We ask each other three questions every week. The loser, we keep a score. The loser at the end of the year has to get a Nisian footy tattoo on their bum. Yep. Now, the score is 18 to 16.5. 18 for Sam. I'm on 16.5. And I'm up where Sammy may get a couple more. Hopefully not.
He said off air that I'm not getting any right. So these questions will be great.
Well, this one's a true or false, my first one. So 50-50.
Yeah, perfect.
And you probably get the same information where I get mine. Bit of an NRL grand final theme here. First one, halves, props, and left second rowers. Haven't scored the first try in a grand final in the NRL era. True or false?
Haven't scored a try. Halves?
Haven't scored the first try.
I haven't scored the first try.
In a grand final.
I want to say true.
It is false. So it's actually halves, props, and right second rowers.
Cool.
Well, that's a good stat. All right, second question. Paul Alamotti, mate, had a great game. Last night in the grand final, he scored a great try as well. How many tries has he scored this season? 8, 9, 10 or 11?
8, 9, 10 or 11. 8, 9, 10 or 11. He didn't play all the games. I'm going to go, he scored a hat-trick in one of them. I'm going to go 9.
Close. It was 8.
Damn it.
Last night he scored his 8th try.
Ah.
All right, Clive Churchill medalist. Liam Martin got it last night for the Penrith Panthers.
Yep.
How many players have won the Clive Churchill medal despite being on the losing team? 3, 4, or 5?
Yeah. I know someone from Manly received it on the losing team. So how many are there?
3, 4, or 5.
I'm going to go with the lowest number, 3.
It was 5.
Oh.
So we have Bradley Clyde from the Raiders, 91.
Nisian knowledge in this one?
This was the out-the-box one. 93, Brad McClay. DCE was the Manly one, 2013. And Jack Wyden, 2019. And Nathan Cleary, 2020.
Oh, heaps of Pacifica talent in there. You could have just said Willie Mason for the Clive Churchill medal for the Pacifica player that
He's
won
filthy
it.
Because he got
but anyway, none from three. That's our time up for today for Nisian footy. You gave me no minutes for my rugby chat. You're selfish, but remember, you can catch up on all of our chats with athletes like Premiership winner Pani Hopoate wherever you get your podcasts.
Ka kite.
See you later. Off you.
He's rattled.
This show was produced on the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation.